The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the programme and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Anne Scott James, Dillis Powell, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norden. Here's round one to test their vocabulary. Two marks if they get the meanings of these words right. Beginning with Anne Scott James. Anne, what is a cellarette?
Well, something to do with drink, I should think.
Yes?
It's a piece of furniture which is used for holding drinks.
Yes, that's absolutely right. It's a teeny-weeny cellar, as you might say. A case or sideboard with bins and doors in the front for keeping bottles or decanters in a dining room. And not the kind that you lock up so that the parlourmaid can't get at it, which is called a tantalus. Two marks. Hank Miller, what is a Somerset?
A Somerset. As far as I'm concerned, it's sandals, shorts, and a rather vulgar shirt.
I like that. It's not right, but it's jolly nice.
Somerset.
No, what?
Is it a make of cart horse?
Somerset.
That's the surrey with the fringe on top.
Saddle.
What kind of saddle?
Pack saddle.
Pack saddle.
1.5 marks. You're fighting your way through, but you're not going to get much further, I think. It's a padded saddle made especially for a one-legged rider. And it comes from Lord Somerset, who used one of these curious objects. 1.5. Dillis Powell. The meaning of the word farinose, F-A-R-I-N-O-S-E, farinose.
Witty.
In what sense?
Witty.
You're right, but in...
Witty.
Yes, but that isn't, to me, a terribly descriptive adjective.
Well, it's made of wheat. It's kind of floury substance.
No, keep on that line and you're getting nearer to it.
Powdery.
That's it. It's mealy, sprinkled with powder. It can mean yielding flour. And it comes from the Latin farina, which is flour, pollen, starch, things like that. Dennis Norden, what is a fardel? F-A-R-D-E-L, fardel.
Well, it comes in to be or not to be.
Yes, it does.
Fardel. Sounds like a far-off yodel, doesn't it? Over the other side of the mountain. It's for who would fardels bear to grunt and strain under a...
Yep.
Weary life, but that the dread of something after death, that undiscovered country from whose bourne no traveller e'er returned, puzzles the will.
Well done.
And it's a burden.
That's it. You've pretty well answered it by your quotation from Hamlet.
What?
It is a burden or a bundle of a pretty cumbersome kind, an old French word, diminutive from fardeau, which means a burden. 2 marks. Well, before we begin round two, I give each team a quotation for them to write down, and the two women members of the team will, I hope, go on studying those quotations, because at the end of the programme, I shall ask them where the quotations come from. So, Anne Scott-James with Dennis Norden, your quotation is, "Our watchword is security." And Dillis Powell and Frank, yours is, "The sound of music." At the end of the programme, I shall ask Dennis and Frank to give me their ideas of how these phrases came to be said or written. So, on to round two, which is about legend and mythology. 2 marks for a correct answer. Anne Scott James, who are the Myrmidons? M-Y-R-M-I-D-O-N-S, Myrmidons.
I associate them with Homer.
Yes?
Something, I associate them with Achilles.
Quite right. Very closely.
Now, they must have been the band of followers of Achilles.
Absolutely right. They were a semi-legendary race of Thessalians who followed Achilles' family, his father Peleus first, and subsequently they were his sort of battalion of troops in the war against Troy. Very fierce and warlike, and carried out orders without any compunction at all. And so it came to mean a hired ruffian or thug or servant, and then rather rudely, about the police, the Myrmidons of the law. 2 marks. Frank Muir, who was Deucalion? D-E-U-C-A-L-I-O-N, Deucalion.
Duke Ellington's foreign brother. Deucalion.
He came very early in the history of the world.
Very early indeed.
Yes. He was practically an inventor. He threw something over his shoulder.
He
threw a rock over his shoulder.
Yes, what happened?
Man and woman.
Yes.
Two marks.
Yes.
So if you'll give me who Deucalion's opposite number was, as it were, in Genesis, I'll give you 2 marks.
Oh, no.
Yes, all right, that'll do. You creep her with your two marks. Deucalion was the Greek Noah, the same legend turning up in Greek mythology, the son of Prometheus, and Zeus tried to destroy the human race, which he thought was degenerate, by causing a flood. And then Deucalion took his father's advice and built a large chest, a sort of tea chest, in which he and his wife, Pyrrha, escaped by floating, and they landed on Mount Parnassus after floating for 9 days. When he got there, he very prudently sacrificed to Zeus, who had caused the flood. He went and consulted an oracle, and he said, I want a bit of human race round me. And he was told by the oracle that if he would cover up his head, and Pyrrha do the same so he couldn't see, and then throw over his shoulders the bones of their mother, everything would be okay. Well, then they scratched their heads a bit about what were the bones of their mother, and rightly deduced that that meant the stones in Mother Earth. All these stones that Deucalion threw turned into men, and all the stones that Pyrrha threw turned into women, and here we all are now. Too much. Let us bow. Who are the Harpies?
The Harpies? Well, a very disagreeable race of people who, when you were... When you were eating,
yes,
they would arrive and sort of mess up the food.
Yes, and what did they look like?
Oh, they had wings,
mm-hmm.
And they were very disgusting.
They didn't look entirely like birds. What else did they look like?
Oh, they must look like women as well.
That's it. Yes, that's good enough. That's right. They were the goddesses of the storm. They were supposed to be the people who abducted those who disappeared without trace, sort of professional kidnappers. Originally, in the first legend, in Hesiod, they weren't unpleasant. They were rather beautiful women. But later, as in the story of the Argonauts, as Tullius quite rightly says, they were rather nasty-looking monsters, birds with women's faces and bodies, but birds' wings and claws and tails. And if you had a picnic, they mucked the whole thing up. Dennis Norden, what was Arcadia?
It was a long, very difficult to read thing by Sir Philip Sidney.
Yes?
About this land where there's all woods and forests and everybody sings follow, 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 and then many, many pipes of pan.
Yes.
And what's that sort of place?
It was originally an actual place in southern Greece. It's the central plateau of Peloponnesus with mountains all round it. And the inhabitants being mostly rather simple characters, shepherds and hunters, worshipping Pan. And it became a legendary place in poetry for a rustic, simple retreat where people lived in conditions of contentment and innocence. And so Arcady later became a sort of ideal rustic paradise. 2 marks. Next round is all about origins and derivations, and 3 marks if members of the team can get the present meaning right, and then give me the origin or derivation of these words or expressions. Beginning with Anne Scott James, Anne, the dole.
It's a free payment made by the state to those in need.
Yes. A particular kind of need.
If you're out of work, if you're unemployed,
that's it.
Need it.
That's all right, unemployment relief. And what's the origin, though, of the word? What was it originally?
I can't think how far back it goes. It's not a Greek word, is it? It
goes back to Latin.
It doesn't come from dolor.
Yes.
It does.
Yes, there is.
It means sorrow or sadness.
All right. It was a name given to unemployment relief, though it was originally any kind of charitable distribution. And it was, I think, mainly coined during the 30s, the years of the Depression, when it was a pretty niggardly pittance. But it comes from the Latin word for sorrow or grief or despair. One's dole meant one's lot or destiny. 3 marks. Frank Muir, popinjay.
Popinjay, well, the present inference is foppish, overdressed.
Yes.
Somebody used to be called a macaroni dandy.
Yes.
And is a kind of target for something or other.
Yes.
Sword thrusting.
No, it wasn't sword. Arrows. You stay a bit further.
Arrows.
Yes.
Arrows.
Yes.
It's a target for arrows. It's a stuffed...
That's it.
Something.
A stuffed parrot.
A stuffed parrot used as a target for arrows.
Absolutely right. It now means, though it's not a word I use very often myself, an empty-headed or swaggering dandy or fop, as Frank said. But shooting at the popinjay was a sport at fairs. It was a stuffed parrot fixed on the top of a pole, and you shot at it with burned arrow. 3 marks. Now, dear Lespau, to add zest to something. To add zest to something.
Well, it means to give whatever you're doing or suggesting a kind of cheerful and exciting flavour.
Yes.
Add excitement to it.
And
yes.
Enthusiasm.
And zest. It's something like lemon.
Yes.
It's lemon.
Yes. Now, what was that for?
If you put it on oysters, it makes the oyster shrivel up.
Quite right. To add zest now means to add piquancy or keen enjoyment or relish. But originally, zest was a French word simply meaning lemon peel or orange peel added to a drink or a dish in order to give it flavour. And hence, by figuratively, it meant added flavour or piquancy to other things than eating or drinking. Dennis Norden, table d'hôte.
Table d'hôte is the other menu. Depends whether you're paying the bill or being taken out. Table d'hôte's what you have when you are paying, which is like the fixed menu, which is cheaper.
Yes.
And it's the opposite of a la carte.
Yes. And originally, how did it come to mean this?
Well, it means the table of host.
Yes, that's it.
I think it was the stuff your host ate himself.
Yes,
sure?
The stuff the host ate.
Yes, I think all right. Three. The fixed price lunch or dinner, as opposed to a la carte, when the diner chooses from dishes from a longer list, and therefore, as Dennis says, normally cheaper. But originally it meant exactly that, the table of the host. If your visitor came to your own house, then he normally took what you ate yourself. But also, if you went to an inn in the old days, you'd normally take a meal with the host at his table, and it was the menu, as it were, picked by him and not by you. 3 marks. Well, the next round's initials or abbreviations. 2 marks. I want to know what the following abbreviations represent. Anne Scott James, PWD. PWD.
Oh, it was one of those things in the war, wasn't it?
Mm. Could be.
Secret spy stuff.
No.
Oh, it was very undercover. PWD, Political Warfare Department. It was, really.
Well, unless you've invented that, Anne, which you quite like. You catch me out completely on that. There is a more traditional thing in
which we're not interested in.
No, I mean all.
We were asked a simple question. We gave a simple.
Well, all Hunt's chums were invalided out and came back unfit to fight. They all got shunted into this
room 46 at Bletchley, or something.
Exactly that.
Mine didn't.
Well,
mine was shunted into 10
pioneers. Marks. Well, women were different. They were chosen for brilliance.
I suppose you're saying I'm going to give you your 2 marks. I don't, for the life of me, know whether it's accurate or not. But the more usual one is Public Works Department.
Very flat.
As far as I know, originated in India with the Indian Civil Service. All right, we'll try again. Frank Muir, DMI.
DMI is the Droitwich Municipal Incinerator.
I lived at Droitwich.
Prove it isn't.
Yes, I can. I lived at Droitwich for 7 years, and I don't think they had one then.
We think it's the director of military iniquities. Intelligence. If there is any military intelligence, I'm sure it needs directing, and this is the gentleman who's charged with that.
It's director of military intelligence, and what you say about military intelligence is squares with what Aldous Huxley said, who said there were 3 kinds of intelligence in descending order: human, animal, and military. Dennis Powell, PPS.
Postscript.
Yes, that's one of them. Do you know the other one? I don't. You can get your marks. There is another one, too.
Is there?
PPS, yes.
They know.
In the political sphere.
Political art.
Parliamentary private
secretary, yes.
All right, audience mustn't help.
Thank you.
Mucks up the marking. Postscriptum, that is a further postscript after you've already sent your love to Aunt Nellie, and you think there's something else you want to say as well, PPS, or parliamentary private secretary. 2 marks. Dennis Norden, FRAD.
Fellow of the Royal Academy of something that begins with D.
That's it. That's three parts of the answer.
What? Drawing? No.
Move among the arts, you'll get it.
Dancing?
Yes.
One and a half.
Remember the audience.
Fellow of the Royal Academy of Dancing.
Well, now we come to the last round and go back to those quotations I gave the two teams earlier in the programme. Two marks, Anne, if you can give me the origin of your quotation, our watchword is security.
Well, it's one of the great statesmen.
Yes.
And I have two in mind, but I think it was Pitt.
Yes. Any preference between the Pitts?
William Pitt, the elder. The elder.
Yes, all right, that'll do. Attributed to William Pitt, Earl of Chatham, though I can't help thinking it might have been said by almost any good prime minister.
Yes, absolutely.
Our watchword is security. Now, Dillis Fowle, will you give me the origin of yours, which was The Sound of Music?
Well, it's a title thought up, I should have thought, by Hammerstein.
Yes. Sound of Music, a very successful musical by Hammerstein, Rogers writing the music, and has been turned into a film. Two marks. Well, now I'm going to ask Frank and Dennis to give me their explanation of how these quotations came into being. And on this occasion, the marks will go to whichever incredible explanation receives the longer amount of applause from the audience here in the theatre. So, back to Dennis Norton with his quotation. Our watchword is security.
I was called last week to the office of MI5 to meet the director of counter-espionage, M. I said, why have you called me here? He said, I won't beat about the bush, I'll tell you. He said, for some time now, information about our military secrets has been leaking to a foreign country whose name I am not empowered to tell you, but they've got a jolly good ballet company. He said, we know what happens. There's a network of spies throughout England, and weekly they telephone their information to one central clearinghouse for which they are given the telephone number, which changes every week. And what we want to know is how they get that telephone number. And we think we do know. He said, last week, a dead Armenian fig packer was fished out of the Thames, strangled, shot in the back, bludgeoned across the head, and a knife in what Shakespeare called the afternoon of the body. I said, you suspect foul play? He said, we're working on it. He said, clutched in his hand was a piece of paper on which was written, listen to my word. He said, underneath this was written two telephone numbers and the initials JL. We believe that Jack Longland is using the program My Word every week to transmit the telephone number which this network of spies rings. He said, now we want you to help us. I said, what do you want me to do? He said, find out in what way he is transmitting this number. Well, Jack Longland, I sat up all night on the problem, and suddenly I found a very interesting fact. The quotations which you gave me for the story, the whole of this series, have one rather strange thing in common. One was, most men lead lives of quiet desperation by Thoreau. And the other one was, O wild west wind, thou breath of autumn's being by Shelley. Quickly I dashed the phone, checked against the phone, then rang up M. I said, I've got it. I've broken the code. I know how he does it. He said, how? I said, I always get a quotation whose author has seven letters in his name. He said, but surely it isn't up to Jack Longland to pick the quotation. I said, by golly, you're right. And then I remembered, the man who compiles the quotation, the man called Edward J. Mason. And I recall there was a scandal about him some years ago. He'd been picked up in a public telephone box, dialing swear words. The BBC had hushed it up, of course,
and nobody knows, but obviously what had happened was that Longland had got onto him and was now blackmailing him into putting into the script whatever quotation he so desired. Every author I get has seven letters. Obviously, what happens is the agents all listen. They go to the telephone and they dial on the London Exchange that name. I said, do you remember the two telephone numbers that you fished out of the river on that man's piece of paper? He said, yes. I said, 1 week I had a quotation by Thoreau. Dial Thoreau on a London telephone exchange, you get Thornton Heath, 7328. He said, by golly, that's one of the numbers. The second one was by Shelley. Dial Shelley on a London telephone exchange, you get SHG and the rest of the numbers. Shepherd's Bush, 5539. He said, that was the other number. He said, we've got him. We've got him. This week, we will switch the quotation, which is what we did. Edward J. Mason broke down, confessed, cried like the weakling he was, and we substituted this quotation. Agents all over the country have dialed up Chatham, the Earl of Chatham. Chancery Lane, 8426 on your dial, Jack. Headquarters of MI5. Right, then you may take him away. I think it's a mark of M that he chose the quotation. Security is our watchword, Jack Longland.
I had nothing to say, at least until I consult my solicitor. And we go on to Frank Muir, and his quotation, if you remember, was The Sound of Music.
For the next 30 or 40 minutes, the microphone is mine. And I'm not going to tell you a story, instead I'm going to seize this opportunity to broadcast to the world the true facts, to refute this foul and vicious calumny which has been spoiling my life, this vile rumour that ever since the middle of my marriage service, I've been drunk. Absolutely untrue. And yet I have this awful thing hanging over me. They say, Muir, he's a drunk, a lush. He's always at it, you know. And these things just sort of happen to me, and I'd like to explain why this rumour has been spread. And that it's wrong. It is just a rumour. When I arrived at my village, I mean, just after I was married, about 15 years ago, the second day I was there, I was making an occasional table in the shed, and I was using some glue, some impact glue, to glue the thing together, and I was clamping it together with my knees, and I must have got a little glue on the inside of both the knees of my trunk. Because when I straightened up and clamped my knees together, they were fast lodged. So I reached for the bottle of methylated spirits. None. Across the other side of the road, there is an oil and colour merchant which sells methylated spirits. So I staggered and weaved, my knees locked together, across the road. Well, there was half the village, of course, had to be waiting for a bus there. And they were all muttering and turning away and hiding the children's eyes. And even a woman with a spaniel, I noticed, draped the spaniel's ears over its eyes. See this figure. I tried to reassure them. I waved the bottle at them to explain it. It just happened to be an ordinary whiskey bottle, you know, that one. But they just think these things, you know. But it all came about because of this awful thing that happened at my wedding, you see. Because the, you know, what is the symptom of a drunk, of a man who's over-imbibed? He gets hiccups, that's it, isn't it? You people, I can see, your hiccups are probably gentle and mild. A little sort of genteel hic. Other like a little sort of bird hopping. But mine is a sort of deep, rending thing, cataclysmic, which comes right up from the chest. It's rather like two rhinoceroses severing a linen sheet. and it happens and it rings round. Well, I get hiccups if I run a mile and then take a sip of iced lager. It doesn't happen very often. But what gives me hiccups is nervous tension. Remember the marriage service? When it came to that bit about all my worldly goods I thee endow, suddenly my nerves got the best of me. And out it came. And that's really what's given me this terrible reputation right from my wedding and ever since. Because as he said, with all thy worldly goods I thee endow, and I repeated it, suddenly round the church it rang, the sound, it ricocheted off the stained glass windows. And you know what the sound was. It was the sound of Muir's hic!
By your vote, Frank Muir just wins the contest of the two stories, and his team, that is Frank and Dillis Powell, win the entire contest by 2.5 marks. And that also brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Schryan and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC. ¶¶